Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is your good friend, the very esteemed and well-travelled Clarence Copernicus Cloverleaf, welcoming you to another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon. You can always feel free to call in at 602-753-1883 to ask a question to the host or any of his well-established guests. Just please remember when calling in to be on your best behavior. This is a G-rated show, you know. Hey, that was a wicked rhyme! Anywho, just be sure to be kind and courteous. Now, on to the main event!
Alrighty, we're back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I am the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon, and it is an absolute honor to welcome former WWF superstar Duke the Dumpster Drozzi. How's it going, brother?
It's going great. Thank you for having me on the show.
Oh, it's an absolute honor. You've been all over the place lately since you kind of came back up. You were kind of laying low for a while, and you're back, and things look like they're going great for you.
I am definitely having fun with it this time, that's for sure. I was off the grid there for a while, but yeah, I've come back and having fun talking to the fans, interacting with the fans and doing shows and things like that. So yeah, it's been a blast.
Have you actually been wrestling any?
I'm just starting to get back in the ring. I did like an 8-man tag match with the Lynch Mob here in Tennessee, and I am getting ready to do a triple threat hardcore match over in North Carolina versus Blackest Jack in Big Country. But yeah, I'm getting back in the ring.
Well, that's awesome to hear. I mean, you're always in my mind a great competitor. And I think your tenure with WWF should have lasted longer. But I guess starting off, how did you or why did you decide to get into pro wrestling? Was it something you'd always wanted to do? Was it something that was kind of out of nowhere?
Well, I was an athlete growing up, and I got into amateur wrestling in high school. But as a kid, though, I was always watching professional wrestling. Like, I grew up in Miami, Florida, so we always watched championship wrestling from Florida with Gordon Solie, you know, Dusty Rhodes, Barry Windham, Lex Luger, Ric Flair, all those guys. Watched it every week. I would go to the live shows. It was like they ran every week, it seemed. They would be every Wednesday, they'd be in the Miami Beach Convention Center, and I would go to as many shows as I could. And then one day I went, my dad took me to watch WrestleMania 1, and that was the definitive moment where I decided that I wanted to be a professional wrestler.
So you knew for quite some time that's what you wanted to do with your life.
Yeah, I was always extremely interested and very entertained by watching professional wrestling. When I was coming up and when I was moving on into like high school age and I was really kind of getting interested in it, I was watching the Road Warriors just because they were such a spectacle to watch. The way they came out, the way the fans reacted to them, the way that they just basically beat people up. And I also watched Ric Flair, you know, in the 1980s, Ric Flair was just such a machine to watch in that ring. The way that he worked and the psychology he had, that is what kind of hooked me into the wrestling business.
Oh, yeah, Flair and the Horsemen were tearing up the NWA in the mid-80s, and, you know, such great action with guys like Magnum T.A. and Nikita Koloff. It was just some of the greatest wrestling ever had to offer.
And some of the greatest promos you've ever seen. The Four Horsemen, on a weekly basis, they would come out on the TBS and lay down these promos that were amazing.
Right. Yeah, it was definitely ahead of its time. And you, of course, debuted in WWE in 1994. How did you get the call up? How did you get involved to begin with the WWF time?
Well, it's funny because as I was finishing college in 1993, I had a plan to drive around. I had made a promotional package, even like with a resume, with a tape, a VHS tape. This is back in 93, of course, and promo pictures. And I had made a bunch of them. And I was going to drive across the country trying to get a job in one of the, you know, existing territories. And what ended up happening, though, is there was a convention at the Miami Beach Convention Center for TV executives called the NATP Convention. And a lot of people were going there trying to sell their shows to television executives. And one of two of the groups there were WCW and the WWF. And I took the opportunity to kind of crash the convention, and I walked up to Vince McMahon and handed him one of my promotional packages, and that's how I got hired.
Wow, I had to take some balls.
Yeah, I had to do something. I didn't have a brother or a cousin or a dad that was in the business, you know, or no real good friends in the business up there, so I had to get creative, so that's what I did.
Very, very cool. That's, man, I don't think just anybody could have walked up. I mean, you had to have given some really awesome, you had to sell them pretty good on it, I'm sure.
Well, I wore my best suit. That's one thing. And I also got, I knew a TV executive in Miami, Florida, who gave me his credentials. So it looked like at first glance, like I was a TV executive. I had the whole thing planned out. And I just went walking in there like I was a TV executive. And I walked up to Vince. And I think he thought I was an executive at first because he had a big smile on his face and shook my hand. And then I pitched him, of course, and he was very nice to me. And he took the promotional package and had J.J. Dillon call me about a week later.
That is really awesome. And, of course, debuting in the summer of 94, you got into a pretty nice little feud with Jerry the King Lawler. And the whole hardcore, kind of the first hardcore wrestling instance on Monday Night Raw, which back in the 90s was not what what WWF was all about.
No, and we got in trouble for that because it was live TV, and me and Jerry the King Lawler kind of talked about it and did it kind of on the down low without real permission. I mean, we had one of the side, like, TV agents, Jack Lanza, okayed it, basically, but we didn't go all the way up to Vince and ask. We just did it, and they were not happy about it because it was considered too violent for the WWF product at that time, and they, you know, we got into some trouble about it. I think it may have cost me a pay-per-view match with Jerry the King Lawler because it seemed like they kind of cut the feud short after that. It didn't go as long as it should have. And, of course, they made him apologize on TV. Gorilla Monsoon and Macho Man apologized, and it was just kind of ridiculous. You know, it could have had so much heat, but they kind of squashed it right away because it was considered too violent at that time.
Oh, yeah, and then, like, you know, just a couple of years later, Steve Austin's bleeding all over the ring, and Bret Hart's got him knocked out halfway. And, you know, even going into the 2000s, they just kind of let loose for a while and did just whatever, so it's kind of interesting how things have, you know, kind of went south with the whole, you know, that being banned and uncalled for.
Well, and I think Vince McMahon realized that in order to compete with what WCW was doing, which, first of all, they were taking most of his top guys, but also just the product, it was a bit more of an edgy product in WCW at that time. So in order to compete with them, he had to basically take the gloves off, and I think he actually used that terminology. I had to take the gloves off, and he just kind of opened it up and started bringing in more of that hardcore edge to his product, bringing in the ECW guys and having the guys on the main roster do more of the crazy stuff and the cage matches, the ladder matches, the TLC, all that stuff started coming into play just because that's what the fans wanted. And Vince McMahon finally changed with the times.
Absolutely. And you also went on to have a nice feud with Hunter Hearst Helmsley, of course, later known as Triple H. And handing in his first loss in the WWF, that whole experience had to be pretty awesome.
Yeah, but it's funny because every time I got to beat somebody that was, you know, more of a main event kind of guy, if I ever had an opportunity to beat somebody that was another superstar, I never pinned him. It was always by count out or by disqualification, which the Triple H thing, they ended that free-for-all match when I beat him. It was by disqualification. They had Gorilla. He hit me with Brass Knucks, and Gorilla Monsoon comes out and says, "Oh, I'm reversing the decision." And then, of course, that determined that I would be the 30th guy in the Royal Rumble, and he had to go in number one. And that set up the whole angle with us, of course. And then another time, we were talking about Jerry the King Lawler before. You know, the big blow-off for that was I wrestled him on Monday Night Raw, and we did a match. And then towards the end of it, the Doink and Dink the Clown got involved, and he chased Dink the Clown around the ring and got counted out. So that's the way that I'd beat Jerry the King Lawler. So it was always interesting that I could never pin any of these guys. But, you know, yeah, I handed Triple H his first loss via disqualification.
I guess, you know, everything can sound good. And then there's always like, well, but.
Yeah, and I can always just say I gave Triple H his first loss, and then I can just end it right there. I don't have to say anything else.
Right, and me going, trying to get more out of you just made it sound worse. So I guess good for me there.
Right.
And I found it pretty interesting, reading lately that you refused a job to the iconic Stone Cold Steve Austin, probably one of the nicest guys I've ever interviewed. And you were on his show lately too. How did all that come about and why?
Well, interestingly, that's where the Triple H feud came from too. But what happened is they were beating me pretty regularly on TV. I had become the guy that was losing to all the new heels that came in. You know, Duke the Dumpster would get beat by him. I would be their first TV match and they'd beat me. And I was getting frustrated in my first contract, that first two-year contract, which basically was no real guarantee money or nothing, but it was coming to an end. And right as it was coming to an end, they were, like, not even putting me on TV very much anymore. It was just kind of showing up for TV and not doing anything. It was to the point where I left my gear in the car. And then one day, at the last second, they decided to make me an opponent for another new guy that came in named the Ringmaster. And, of course, it was Steve Austin, and we all knew who he was. I knew who he was. And that was the moment I decided to take a stand and just say, I was frustrated, and I needed to know what I had to do to better my position. That was basically my argument. Yeah, in the process, I basically refused to do a job for Stone Cold Steve Austin back when he was the Ringmaster, but I immediately took him aside and sat down with him and said, "Listen, I need you to understand, they've been killing me for a long time here, and I've decided to take a stand, and it has nothing to do with you personally." He completely understood, especially coming from the situation that he did with WCW. He understood 100%, and we actually became really good friends after that and rode together quite a bit. So, you know, it wasn't anything personally against him. It wasn't not wanting to do a job to him because of who he was or was not. It was just a matter. That was the point. That was the tipping point for me where I felt I had to take a stand, and that's basically what I did.
I think you have to eventually, or you're just going to keep getting pushed around and, you know, you're not going to get anywhere with your career.
Yeah, you do. A lot of times there's a point where you have to stand up for yourself, but there's also the right way to do it. And just saying you don't want to do a job is not the right way to do it. You have to come at them with, if you're going to shoot down their idea, you have to come at them with a better idea. That's the proper way to do it. But because my contract was up, they let me not – I didn't have to wrestle Steve that night. And because my new contract was coming up, Vince was kind of worried that I was going to leave. So he put me in that angle with Triple H as a result of me refusing to do the job for the ringmaster, Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Interesting. So it didn't turn out all bad.
I mean, no, I got a nice feud out of it. Of course, I wasn't going to beat Triple H either. So, but, you know, and a lot of other things were going on at that time. Like I was, during my feud with Triple H at one point, I got hurt falling out of the ring and I started taking painkillers and doing all that crazy stuff. And it got worse. And I really just was not making logical decisions. I became more irrational in my thoughts, my thought process in terms of doing business. And that really hurt me in the end. And that's why it didn't last. See, I rolled over and signed for another year when they gave me the Triple H feud. But I think I barely made it. I don't even think I made it through 6 months of that next contract, because by then I was just frustrated and pissed off and ended up, you know, telling them they could send me home, and Vince obliged. He sent me home.
Yeah, that's one of the big downsides of wrestling is, you know, we've seen so many people get addicted, lose their lives to painkillers and prescription medicine, and it's just really unfortunate. But, you know, as much as you guys put your bodies on the line, it's kind of, you know, that's kind of what you got to do to get back out there.
Well, it was just common practice then. And then another thing about it was, you know, the World Wrestling Federation back then, Titan Sports, was not the, you know, mega company, billion-dollar company that the WWE is today. There was no doctors running around in the back. There was no, you know, health insurance plans. There was none of that. If you got hurt, you had to basically – the unwritten rule was keep your mouth shut and find a way to get back out there, because if you can't work, you're not going to earn money. And that's kind of how it worked back in those days. You know, guys would hurt themselves, and wrestlers were – adjusting other wrestlers' backs like chiropractors in the locker room and stuff. You know, we made do with what we had, which wasn't much, but it was definitely a different world. But a lot of guys would fall into that vicious cycle of getting by using narcotic pain medication. And unfortunately for a lot of people, it got out of hand. But yeah, that was just part of it, man, back then. Since then, they've cleaned all that up, which is good.
Yeah, they've really tightened down on with the wellness policy, so it's you know, it's saving lives.
Yeah, and they have doctors and, you know, to treat and help them treat people, and you're under a guaranteed contract now. So if you get hurt, they're, you know, they have a vested interest in making sure you get treatment and get help or get surgery or whatever you need. You know, before it was much more like a conveyor belt of mangled bodies. If you got hurt, they just push you aside and grab the next guy. That's kind of how it worked back then. It's a lot different now.
Oh, absolutely. 2001, one of the greatest battle royals I think ever happened, the gimmick battle royal, was at WrestleMania 17, and you were a part of that. What was it like coming back and appearing on that event?
It was exciting to be in a WrestleMania and walk out in front of a crowd of 65,000 people or whatever it was in the Astrodome. But, other than that, I was in no condition to work. I was coming back from Miami, Florida. I was strung out on drugs. And at that point I was on methadone, cause I was so bad on narcotic painkillers that, you know, I just had enough methadone to make it through the weekend so I could be in that battle royal. But I mean, yeah, it was my WrestleMania moment, but it could have been so much better if I wasn't so messed up. But you know, it is what it is. It was still fun, especially in the ring. It was hilarious because everybody was just goofing off and cutting up. The Iron Sheik, Nikolai Volkoff, Brother Love, Jim Cornette, the One Man Gang, Kamala, all these guys. It was just hilarious. Nobody was serious. Everybody was just having fun, and it was, in that respect, it was fun. But yeah, I came in, I was in no shape to really work. I'm glad it was just that battle royal where I really didn't have to do any high spots or plan out a match, because that would have been a disaster.
Understandable. Well, what does the future hold for you? I know you went on to become a special education teacher, and of course you're back in wrestling now. So what's the future hold for you, Mike?
Well, I'm currently working for a drug court program here in Warren County. You know, I work with individuals who are trying to get off of drugs, who have committed crimes, are facing jail or prison time, and this is kind of a program that'll take them out of jail and give them the opportunity to get clean and learn how to live normal lives. I actually went through this drug court program because I got arrested back in 2013. Because I was out there still running around, you know, buying and selling pills with people, all the while being a special ed teacher during the day. But yeah, I ended up getting busted, and I went through this program. So now I'm trying to help other people that are going through the same thing. And eventually I'd like to become a drug and alcohol counselor at a rehab somewhere here in Tennessee. And on the side, yes, I'm doing the wrestling again. I'm just kind of having fun with it. I do appearances. I have, like I said before, I started wrestling again. And added to that, now I'm working with this production company. It's called the Dumpster Fire is the production company, but the wrestling portion of it is called the 60 Minute Broadway. And that is a YouTube channel. And on that channel, you can see my video podcast each week called Talking Trash with Duke the Dumpster Drosy. And we have a podcast now that we're doing. We just did a live one actually on Easter, and it got a really good response. So that is what I'm doing now, kind of a dual, you know, I'm trying to help counsel people on one hand, but then on the other, I'm kind of slowly getting back involved in the wrestling business, but having fun with it this time. I'm not getting all wrapped up in it and crazy like I did the first time. I'm just, whatever happens, happens, and I'm glad with that. I have no expectations as far as the wrestling business now. I just have fun, and it's great to see old friends at these conventions, guys I worked with in the past. It was great to reconnect with Stone Cold and do his podcast. So from that point of view, I'm just trying to have fun with it now.
That's what it's all about. Thank you so very much for joining me today, Mike. It was an absolute honor, and you know, best of luck with you coming back into wrestling.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate you having me on your show. It's been a blast.
Absolute honor, sir. Have a great night. Thanks again.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, you guys, big thanks to Duke the Dumpster Drosy. If you guys just joined us, maybe you joined us 5 minutes ago, you're like, oh, my God, it's almost over. Well, don't worry, because you can go back in about 10 minutes and download the archived version. And check out Duke the Dumpster on Facebook. He's getting around. Got a picture with Virgil. That's crazy. All right, guys, we'll be back. No show scheduled yet, but I will let you know, of course, on my Facebook page, facebook.com/theonlyhostwiththemost. Or stay tuned to blogtalkradio.com/globallyfredonetwork. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.